This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this second hour of Facing Our Lives today is Peter Fortunato, and he's here in a capacity now to talk with us about the foundation of life and a little bit about its history. But we have just finished a conversation about his new book, and you picked a Grateful Dead song. Should we start with that Grateful Dead song right out? Okay, yeah, so say a bit about it.
Okay, so this is Eyes of the World by the Grateful Dead. This is a live recording, probably the best version of the song, according to Deadheads, Grateful Dead fans. I'm a lifelong Grateful Dead fan. I was at the May 8th, 1977 concert in Barton Hall. I was at the actual one. But this is from Englishtown, New Jersey, in the late 1970s. Now, why this song, The Eyes of the World? So the basic lyric is, wake up right now to find that you are the eyes of the world. Nice. And it's a beautiful, upbeat song about spirituality and about this sense of letting go, you know, of my difference and recognizing that whatever it is, sees through my eyes and experiences the world. And it's a wonderful, upbeat tune to go out on.
Very nice.
Yes, yes. Or as we say, we're coming into the foundation of light.
Yeah, okay.
Right outside this lazy summer.
This is the Made of Clay Report. Peaches Gillette and Eric Clay are your co-hosts, and we are in conversation with Peter Fortunato in this hour about the 50th anniversary of the Foundation of Light. And I was just hoping that we could explore a little bit about what that history is, why it got started, how it fit into the spiritual landscape of Tompkins County in Ithaca. But first, Give me some dates. Give us some, what's happening to celebrate the 50th anniversary?
Right. So 50 years takes us back to 1973. And in 1973, Colonel John Payne and Major Kate Payne both retired from the U.S. Air Force. And Mabel DeMott, who for many years ran the corner bookstore on Cayuga Street in downtown Ithaca, it's where the Christian Science Reading Room is nowadays, they decided that they wanted to form a meditation and a study group about, let us call them spiritual subjects beyond the restrictions of organized religious dogma and churches and synagogues and temples. So this, remember what the era is, right? It's the early 1970s. There's a big opening in consciousness, not only in North America, but around the world. And so they started by meditating in the basement home of the Paines in Cayuga Heights, and reading certain texts and then talking about the texts. And then gradually they attracted other like-minded people. And some people stayed and some people said, phooey, this isn't for me, or hooey, I'd rather go to church on Sunday morning, and that's fine. But gradually the circle grew and grew. And then eventually the Paines built a house out on Turkey Hill Road. It's still in the town of Ithaca. It's right near Dryden. And they wanted that house. They designed that house as a passive solar house. They had a greenhouse in the basement. It was built with a lot of cement blocks to retain solar heat. They wanted it to be a kind of an ark, let's put it that way, for whatever was coming next. And frankly, at that time, and remember, this is also the time of the OPEC crisis, the fossil fuel crisis.
The oil embargo,
The oil embargo, oh my goodness, the oil economy may come to an end. Whoever thought that could happen? So there were a lot going on, and the Paines thought that they were getting ready for kind of another phase of back to the land in the United States. They weren't the only ones, incidentally, at that time. In California, where I would soon be living in 1975, I was part of the back to the land movement, leaving the Bay Area to go live in the mountains of the Sierra Nevada mountains. So in their home, Kate Payne, who had been a librarian as well as an Air Force officer, assembled her library of esoteric studies and also began collecting books that had to do with plants and seeds and how you take care of the land, how you try to live on the land, subsistence farming, et cetera, et cetera. And so then there were meetings. They acquired, it's possible that Mabel Beggs and her husband, Mabel DeMott, who became Mabel DeMott Beggs, and her husband, who was a minister at Cornell United Religious Work, it's possible they bought the one-room schoolhouse, which still stands at the corner of Ellis Hollow and Turkey Hill Road. And so that became the foundation of light. That became the center. Very appropriate. It was the historic one-room schoolhouse of the Ellis Hollow community. And so for many years, that is where study groups and Sunday meditation went on. And then there would also be the use of the library in the Paines house. And there would also be individual sessions studying with Kate or with John. John died first. John was a remarkable energetic healer, we would call him now. In those days, we probably called him a psychic healer. He had the gift of laying on hands. He could work on people without being physically present with them, and many people attested to his healing powers. So he died first of the three. And then in the early 1990s, as Mabel became a widow also, there was a feeling that something more needed to be done. And there was a feeling that the organization needed to have something more substantial and needed to grow. And so a new building was constructed. And that's the building that many people in Ithaca know. Many people have been there for all kinds of events, for weddings, for memorial services, for dances, for parties, for bar mitzvahs, for bat mitzvahs. It's just been a wonderful resource. And it continues to be a center for healing, meditation, and for study. So that is now more or less recognized in the community as the foundation of life. But it is more than just a physical building. And as I've just sketched out, its history stretches back through some unique individuals at the beginning and many, many other people who have been either members or participants, who've dropped in, who've given teachings there, and so on and so on.
No, it's a powerful presence in the community. And it came into being as mainline religion just imploded. Evangelical Christianity was on the takeoff, had been probably for 10 or 15 years at that point. But by 1980 or 85, Tompkins County would be a Christian minority county. And the reality of that wouldn't become clear until much later. But Foundation of Light has been a big part. One of my experiences at Foundation of Light was attending a vigil that went on, I think, for a full week, 24 hours a day, just before the start of the war in Iraq. And a fellow organized this prayer vigil, and he spent most of the time on top of a cabinet in the pose of longing. I walked into the room and I said, "My God, that is longing." I didn't know what the pose was. I knew it. And that's the kind of experience I've had in that space many, many times. It's just direct heart to heart or just, you know, visceral reaction. Anyway, I ramble.
Yeah, you know, no, thank you.
What when we talk about, when you were speaking about earlier, about how we are all pretty much in search of the same things, happiness, love, all of those things that just keep our hearts pumping, really. And as we were talking just now about kind of the movement toward the Foundation of Life to kind of like get away from all the indoctrination and things like that that was going on in the traditional religions of this country, I wonder if you see anywhere, because part of the things I struggle with is this always running completely away from something to something else, instead of taking the best of all of it and fusing it together. There's always like this kind of like radical rebelliousness, which is what I see going on now, as opposed to saying, well, let's look for the pieces of those things that are the pieces that make us want to come together, that are the pieces that tell us that, yes, we're in search of the same things. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I can talk about it from my own life experience. Yeah. Maybe that's what you're asking me about. So I grew up Roman Catholic, Italian Roman Catholic, right? Is the Pope Italian? Yes, of course. Okay. The answer. I even thought I might have a calling to become a priest until I was a teenager and discovered other joys, let's put it that way. But I always had a spiritual life, and in college I needed to find a new way to have that spiritual life. So, Peaches, you know, in my own story, yes, indeed, I feel that I've carried along, you know, my history. I never recanted my early history. In a sense, I outgrew it. Mm-hmm. Or another metaphor I like to use is it's, you know, there's the concentric circles of the wood of a tree. And, you know, that early Catholic stuff is right at the heartwood.
Yes.
And so a lot of that is what the Jungian psychologists would call my prima materia, the first, material that begins to shape my psychology and my mature spirituality. So I learned a lot from the Catholic Church, you know, about sacramental rites, about, through the liturgy. I learned a lot about the Bible, certainly the Gospels, both the New Testament and the Hebrew Testament. So all of that just seemed like part of who and what I was. But then I wanted something more.
Yes.
And again, let's think about the time period that I'm talking about, right? So I was a Cornell student, 68 to 72. And again, as we just said, the foundation of light basically began in 73. And at that time, there were some very radical things happening in the Catholic Church itself. In fact, Father Daniel Berrigan was the head of Cornell United Religious Work, and he was a major peace political activist. And also David Connor, who was a priest at that time, was also deeply inspired by Daniel Berrigan. We would talk about these things during church, and it was like, my goodness, back at home in my parish, we never talked about stuff like this in church. You know, the priests never gave homilies that included talking about the Vietnam War, for example. And suddenly, I had a new picture of what the religious life might be. So there was that. But then the other thing that happened. And so I went through a period of doubt, right, which is often a phase of one's spiritual growth. I went through a period of doubt. And at that time, two important things happened. I encountered Asian art through an art history course that I took at Cornell with Stan O'Connor, who is a retired professor now. Asian art was his specialty. And when I saw the images of Hindu art and Tibetan Buddhist sculpture and Mughal Muslim art, very interesting dimension of Islam, of course, is the Mughal era, the Indian Muslim era, hundreds of years long. I thought, oh my God, I understand this. Now, you know, is that a past life thing? Maybe, you know, sometimes I entertain that, but it was something, I was looking for something like that. So that was very exciting to me because I'm an artist. I have a, you know, strong aesthetic sensibility. And then in my English literature classes, I was a literature major as an undergrad and began writing poetry and stories. I encountered the poetry of W.B. Yeats and William Blake and the English romantics like Percy Bysshe Shelley and William Wordsworth and William Coleridge. And then that was really when things began to take off, you know, in unexpected ways. And you know, just to round it out, it was suddenly I felt I don't need somebody else's words to explain the spiritual life to me.
Yes.
In fact, I can find my own way to the spiritual life, and poetry and art is going to be one means to finding my way.
Yeah. Yeah, that truly resonates with me tremendously. Right. That I don't. Often people claim to be this and claim to be that, and I don't claim to be any of it. I just want to embrace all of it, as long as it's my part of my path to where I want to be spiritually. Yeah, right. Thank you.
And again, words. The word religion, Latin religare, is usually translated as religament, to bind together again that which has been broken apart. And the purpose of, when I ask a person, what's your religion, they give me an institution. But I said, no, that's not your religion. What you did when your life was torn apart,
right,
how you put yourself back together again, the fact that you can, through poetry and writing, discover the practices and the disciplines without throwing any of that heartwood away.
That's right. Can
figure it out.
That's right.
And to me, that's a tension in the life of the foundation of light. Of respecting people's root religions while pushing them to take practices or maybe those who are so eager to take on practices they're unfamiliar with, almost to worship them in an idol. I mean, in a way that would be called idolatry or just too ego-driven, to then ground them in a discipline. It's a tough balance.
It is, and it has to be done very well. It really does. Otherwise, it turns into a mess, and you end up having, really, you end up having these institutions, let's say, who think that they're doing what the Foundation of Light is doing, when all they're doing is recreating the opposition within the church or within their institution. And I see that happen all the time, because what they think they're doing is being very accepting, but they're only accepting of the things that they want to accept, which is not the same thing, you know? And so it's very interesting. And so I like to hear the other side of that, where when you talk about embracing and accepting, you're really talking about those real words.
Peter, can we break for music? Because I think the music you selected for this moment is a perfect transition. Yep. And you can take off on that question afterwards. Right. Do you want to say a little bit about the song that you've proposed?
I think this is the Bansuri flute music.
Yes, it is.
Yes, and so that's a channel that I found on YouTube, and these are people. I'm not sure who these people are who present this music, but this I think the subtitle of this particular piece was something like Buddha's sleeping. So it's very
This one is feeling calm, I think, is the
feeling calm. Okay.
Feeling calm. And it's coming, and it's appropriate for the celebration that fits with your 50th anniversary, the timing. Yeah.
Yes. And it'll quiet down our animated conversation, perhaps, so we can get back into a more reflective quiet. It's been exciting.
Right. But it's also so okay, let's listen.
Yeah.
This is the Made of Clay Report. Your hosts, PCs Gillette and Eric Clay, are in conversation with Peter Fortunato about the spiritual life at this moment and about Foundation of Light and their 50th anniversary celebration that's taking place on May 5th and 6th. So, Peter, what about the timing of this? What about the grounding of this tradition, of these traditions, and also the openness to others that Peaches was pressing you to explore?
Yeah. So the Foundation of Light is non-dogmatic. It doesn't have any particular creed that it adheres to. And essentially, it is a portal. And many people come through that portal and then leave and go on to join particular spiritual communities other than the Foundation of Light, or they get onto their spiritual path. Maybe they decide they want to go to India and meet a Hindu guru. I mean, things like that have certainly happened. So that's what I say. It's a portal. I've thought about this quite a bit here before our conversation. If you think about what the word foundation means, right? So it's a basis. And a foundation, aside from the meaning of an institution of some kind, it's something you build from. And that has always been a quality over the years at the FOL, is that people have built various things out of this foundation. And to some extent, it has sometimes felt a little, I wouldn't say chaotic, but a little too disparate, too many different things happening. My goodness, during its prime, I was the program director for several years during the 1990s. We would have so many study groups. We had like three or four study groups going on every week, everything from astrology, to dowsing. That's always been very important at the Foundation of Light, earth energies and dowsing. Mm-hmm. And we would bring in, we brought in numerous celebrity guests, so to speak. So there was often a sense of, well, it's too nebulous. That was the word mm-hmm. I wanted. Mm-hmm. And what is the Foundation of Light really? It seems nebulous. A lot of people think, oh, it's just a big rental space. We had a great party there, when my daughter graduated from college. Mm-hmm. Long live the Foundation of Light. Okay. So,
it's light. Sure. It's light. It shines. It's lighthearted. It's light. It's...
You betcha. Betcha. And light is unlimited.
And it doesn't. And the funny thing is light doesn't need a foundation. It just needs a source.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the two are interesting concepts together.
Yes, they are. Really, the closer we look at that, the more unusual it seems. The Foundation of Light. I remember one time at a meeting, somebody blurted out, "The Foundation of Light is darkness." We should go into the darkness and the mystery. That's what the foundation should be.
And we should go there from time to time.
And I thought, yes, for you. Great.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So, it's a nurturing place. It always has been that. Nice. I think that there are several identifiable features of it, and the website summarize them very well. It's a center for healing, for meditation, for spiritual evolution and study and growth. It's all of those things. And there are various ways that you can taste some of that. The Sunday morning meditation group, now it meets at 9 o'clock every Sunday morning. The Sunday morning meditation group has been going since the very beginning. It's kind of been like a relay or passing the torch, from one mm-hmm. person to another. A person will take charge of it, facilitate it, make sure the building is open, welcome people, whoever shows up. Sometimes people come once. Sometimes mm-hmm. they come for years. I've been going for years, not mm-hmm. every week, but for years. And so the meditation group has always been a big part of it, and healing as well. Whatever we mean by healing, I think there has been community healing there. I think that there has been hands-on healing. There certainly is a study group now that is devoted to healing in various aspects. So that has also been a feature of it. The other thing I want to talk about too, though, is this, and that has to do with the stone circle, the megalithic stone circle. Have either of you experienced that at the corner of Turkey Hill and Ellis Island?
I've been present. Yes, I've experienced. I have not been at a ceremony there.
Yeah. So that was originally the first stones. It has evolved and been built over decades. The first stones were there in the early 1990s, actually before the new building was built, when we were still in the schoolhouse. And then over the years, it has been enlarged, and it represents this abiding interest at the foundation of light and what we could call earth energies. And these have to do with what are called geomantic energies. Some people might have heard of ley lines, which are lines of energy, something like acupuncture meridians in the human body, but these are lines of energy in the body of the earth. And in fact, analogously, people have said, well, the stone circles, not only ours, but all over the world, stone circles are something like collections of acupuncture needles that focus these geomantic energies in a particular place. And so to be in a stone circle or to be in a relationship with a particular stone at our circle really can have an effect. I'll just put it that way. It can have an effect. And a lot of people feel it without knowing what to think about it. They don't have a model like I've just sketched out for, you know, why this is here or what it does. But this has been a very important of the foundation of light over the years. I've been very involved with the stone circle. In fact, in recent years, that has kind of become my particular garden, let us say, and I've taken care of it. And some interesting things have happened there just in the past several months, almost as if in getting ready for our 50th anniversary. A couple of stones have broken, which was heretofore unimaginable. You know, how do these megaliths break? Well, you know, stones don't last forever. And so they had to be replaced. And, you know, we had to figure out how to do that. And I kind of was the point man for that. I was happy to take on the responsibility. Hey, my name is Peter. It means stone, right? Petros, Pietro. I love stones and I love crystals. So I felt called to be the person to renovate the stone circle. So on the morning of May 6th, we're going to, at 9 a.m. at the stone circle, we're going to have a rededication ceremony. And I hope to reinstitute a ceremony that we did for many, many, many years on summer solstice morning. At dawn, at the stone circle, we observe the rising of the sun on the eastern horizon. And so that has gone into hiatus in recent years, and I plan to bring it back this year.
Nice.
One of the words that you included have in the description of Foundation of Life, it's a place for friendship. And one of the major issues that I hear from people in a spiritual or religious communities is that they often do not find friends there. Mm-hmm. It can be extremely isolating, even though what's being presented or discussed is incredibly personally powerful, but there are no lateral connections. Now, in many communities, a community is a place of intense and passionate opinions and commitments and whatever. And that can, and if you can, you can have powerful friendships or you can have cold stalemates. And what I'm wondering is, how has the Foundation of Light, since it holds up friendship as an ideal, how does it foster that? And how has it struggled with becoming a place of kind of spiritual combat versus just real rough and tumble support of each other, which people need?
Well, you know, I know what you're saying about spiritual communities, and that's why even those communities with the best intentions often fall apart, you know, because of, you know, if you think about the history, let's say, of the Western Christian Church, I mean, just the ecclesiastical differences. I mean, people were willing to kill each other because in the name of God, you know. Yeah, our species.
In the name of peace.
Yeah, in the name of peace, we kill each other. Nothing so acrimonious has happened at the foundation of light in my memory, anyway. But I think it's this too, Eric and Peaches. You have to keep this in mind, and maybe on your own experience, you can draw on this. You can't make people like other people, and you can't make people stay at a spiritual center if they don't feel comfortable there. Okay. You can put out the welcome mat. You can, you know, try to be open with them about yourself and, you know, be warm to them. But if a person doesn't like the vibe, you know, why should they stay? Mm-hmm. And so I'm only one person from the Foundation of Light, but I think I can speak in general about this. It's based on attraction. You know, if you feel attracted to be part of the place, welcome, wonderful, love to have you. If you don't feel attracted, that's okay. I hope you find a place where you feel more comfortable, where you find what you're looking for.
Yeah. But I'm gonna push on this just a little bit. Because I set the bar not at feeling comfortable.
Yeah.
Which many people who are in congregations where they don't have friends, but they feel comfortable there.
Yeah.
Because in many ways, our expectations in this culture are very low. We would be happy to feel comfortable. But when you have friends, it's complicated. How does the Foundation of Life foster the kind of, you can't make people like each other, but you can open up opportunities to really honestly address each other. Yes, and that's what's not happening where friends don't form.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think there are a number of ways to be a friend, right?
Yep.
So, you know, there's a quote from William Blake I often think back on. It's a paradox. Opposition is true friendship, he says. So sometimes, you know, when you're in a relationship and there is a opposition, one has to wrestle with that a little bit if the relationship is worth maintaining. And I believe that that has to do with recognizing our differences, with making an effort to span the differences if the friendship is worth keeping. I think this is what we're trying to foster at the Foundation of Life. Primarily in recent years, my two interfaces with the organization have been through the meditation group, which I led for a number of months on Zoom during the COVID pandemic, and also through the Healing Studies group, which right now is still primarily meeting over Zoom. And it's been interesting with the Healing Study group, without, you know, breaching pledges of anonymity. I would say when you begin to open up to other people, think about this in your own lives. Sometimes you find there are people, you know, who you really like instantly and you feel a kinship with. Other times there are people who are of a different type or a different vibe, and yet you feel there is something authentic there. And so that requires an extra effort to, maybe this is what I'm getting to. Perhaps the highest form of friendship is to see another for who they actually are, even maybe if you don't like them.
Yes.
But if you, if mm-hmm. you're in a relationship with them, you find a way to relate. And then sometimes, guess what? You find out you like them after a while.
Right. And I think this is what you just said gets, I think Peaches was asking before, how do you keep a spiritual community from becoming cold and frozen versus a hot mess?
Right.
And so go ahead, Peaches. What do you think?
Yeah, there's also a part of what I think in terms of friendships, and certainly in terms of any sort of institution, spiritual institution of any sort. What I often hear is they weren't friendly to me. As if there's not, you have to have a mutual, engaging position where you're willing to take that step forward and they're willing to take that step forward, and you meet somewhere in that area, as opposed to standing back and going, well, if they didn't come to me, they must not be friendly. We have to be both involved in the same friendship activity. Right. And that's what I feel, and that's what I always hear about organizations or churches and things like that. And I often say to people, well, what did you do? Right?
To
foster the friendship.
If you want to make a friend, be a friend. That's Girl Scouts,
right? Exactly, exactly. We don't have to be passive beings waiting for things to happen to us.
Right.
We forget sometimes.
Yes. So I think that really hits the mark here. Involvement, right? If you want to be involved, then be involved. It may be risky.
Right.
You may have to move aside the mask of your persona so that people can see, oh, guess what? You know, I have issues also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Peter, can you just do a summary on what's happening for the 50th anniversary celebration? And also lead us into your closing song.
Sure. All right. So a couple of things are very interesting about the dates that we picked, May 5th and May 6th. So May 5th is the full moon in May. And the first full moon in May, internationally speaking, is regarded as Vesak, or sometimes it's called Wesak, but Vesak. In Asia and South Asia. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it honors the Buddha's birth, the Buddha's enlightenment, and the Buddha's passing into parinirvana. That's when the Buddha left their body, but they didn't die an ordinary death, right? They continue to exist. So the founders of the Foundation of Light regarded this as a wonderful kind of a holding cup or a basket for many sorts of traditions. You know, what is a Buddha? A Buddha is not a god. A Buddha is simply a person who woke up to their real nature. And that real nature, you know, you can name it in many ways, but I think everybody, every human can honor the fact that another human might have found their ultimate truth. And so this anniversary corresponds with Vesak this year. And that was fairly intentional, since the founders would remember that holiday every year. The Foundation of Light is not a Buddhist organization. However, as I said, the Buddha was a person. And as far as I can tell, everybody at the Foundation of Light is person. So there's that nice correlation. But there's other cosmic stuff happening, which I've been studying about. So there's an eclipse of the moon on that full moon night. Nice. And we won't see it in North America, but in other parts of the planet, there will be an eclipse of the moon. And astrologically speaking, that's fairly significant. And indeed, not only is there an eclipse of the moon on that night, but in April, there was another eclipse. And the planets are doing all kinds of amazing stuff. If you're interested in astrology, you can find out about it. I am, to some extent. I'm not an astrologer. And Eric, as you and I were discussing, before the show began, it's spring. Everything is springing up. You know, it's like it where we live, finally it's getting warm enough to be outside and do your garden and clear brush, you know, and all those kinds of things we wait all winter for. So all of that is a wonderful concordance happening around the events on the night of May 5th, starting at 6 p.m. There will be a dish to pass dinner and some opening words. I'm going to be the MC for the event. There will be some opening words. This is why I know this stuff. Some opening words of welcome and a blessing, and then a shared meal. Bring a dish to pass if you can. If you can't, there will be other food. We're also asking people to bring flowers, because that is a traditional way to honor Vesak and to have a Vesak ceremony. By the way, in Desert Wind, My Life in Qatar, there is a chapter about my going to the Vesak ceremony that Sri Lankan Buddhists had at the Sri Lankan embassy in Doha when I was there. And that was a absolutely wonderful experience to have. Nice. So we'll have flowers at the event. And then after the meal, we're going to share some stories about the history. We're going to ask people who've been involved with the foundation. Eric, we were talking about Michael earlier, the
builder.
Who, who was the builder, and I've recently been in touch with him, and I'm so happy he's going to be there. Charles DeMott, who was Mabel DeMott Beggs' son, who was for a while the president of the foundation, will be there. And there will be other reminiscences. We will also recall, now this is a little known fact in the Ithaca community, Dorothy Cotton was a member of the Foundation of Light for many years. Mm. And that's how I got to know Dorothy. And Dorothy and I collaborated for many years on what was called the Burning Bowl Ceremony on New Year's Eve, which the Foundation of Light hosted for the whole Ithaca community. And this was a ceremony that she brought from church in Atlanta. I don't know whose church it was, but this was interesting that Dorothy, what an amazing woman, gosh, that movie about her frankly brings tears as I think about what a person. Anyway, Dorothy was truly committed to the authentic spiritual life, and that's why she was active at the Foundation of Light for quite a long time, and that's the context in which I got to know her. She was very unpretentious about her spirituality. She truly had what in Zen is called a beginner's mind. She was just open. What is this? How can I learn? You know, how does this relate to what I know already? So we're going to remember Dorothy a little bit at the ceremony on Friday night. Afterwards, we hope to have a fire outdoors in a fire pit, safe. And then, as I said, Saturday morning, there's the event at the Stone Circle. And then Saturday throughout the day, there are various events in the main building, including a free poetry workshop led by none other than Mary Gilliland, mm-hmm. who is going to do a workshop she has done before called Litanies and Labyrinths. People will write poetry, and there'll be a sharing of the poetry. There'll also be healing group meeting during the day. There will be a free yoga class during the day. There will be a conversation envisioning the future of the Foundation of Light for those people interested. So Saturday will be a full day, starting in the morning until about 3 in the afternoon. That about sums it up.
Thank you, Peter.
Such a pleasure to be with you.
So nice to meet you finally, Peaches. I heard you when Eric interviewed you, and I know you by reputation. It's nice to be with you.
Yes, thank you. Same here.
So, Peter, you wanted to close with Joni Mitchell.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. American masterpiece, right?
Yes.
Or Canadian.
Canadian. Well, North America. Right.
Yes. Yes, yes.
Yes, so Both Sides Now, which is truly a classic. Yeah. And, you know, it seems to start out as a song about clouds, right? I've looked at clouds, they look like this, they look like that. But I think ultimately it's about the world of duality we ordinarily live in, right? And our illusions. In fact, that's the climactic line in the song. I really don't know clouds at all. You know, it's clouds' illusions, I recall. So and that's been part of our conversation today, hasn't it? All these, you know, illusory ideas that we have about this, about that, about I'm like him, I'm not like her.
Yes.
And so I think that that's a wonderful song to close this out on. And it's just great music, too.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Peter.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Peaches. Thank you.
Good to be with you.
Good to be with you.
Rose and flows of angel hair and ice cream castles in the air and feather canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that weave, but now they only block the sun. They rain and snow on everyone. So many things I would have done, but clouds got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both Something's gained in living it.